Keep on that story with Rob Martyr tonight. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, what a week for speech, free or hate, and also, of course, what we do about it. This has been playing out, and we've seen it play out in the media sphere this week, especially the internet media when we talk about places like Google, Apple, PayPal, OkCupid. Not necessarily a media company, but I guess you could say that it is. It's a lot of images and things like that on there. But what does it mean that today, and we find more and more of these companies are sort of putting a line in the sand, saying this is material. If you're sort of white power music comes up when we talk about Spotify, images or speech that's surrounding white supremacy or neo Nazis. These companies, if the president is not going to step out, they will. And that's what we've seen today. Scott Smith joins us tonight. He's our new media contributor here on The Download. He's also the editorial director at Teamworks Media. Scott, good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you.
This is a fascinating conversation. We kind of talked about it right at the top about the slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll talk about a couple other things in local media as well tonight. But this, the idea that a company like Google or Apple has a set standard of what they believe to be valuable content or I would say just content, is a head scratcher to me, and I want to hear what your thoughts are on the idea of them stepping out and saying we're going to have this content on our sites.
Right. So this came up in two different ways this week. So the first was there's a site called Daily Stormer, which caters to neo-Nazis, and they had posted something pretty horrific about Heather Heyer, the woman who had been murdered during the demonstrations
in Charlottesville,
the
woman who was run over by the car.
Correct.
Right.
And so GoDaddy had first said that they had 24 hours to find another registrar, which is the thing that sort of essentially tells the internet where to find your site, for lack of a longer way to explain it.
good explanation.
And so then they went to Google, and Google said, nope, we're not going to host you either. And right now, the site is offline. It was hosted by some kind of obscure Russian server at one point. And I understand that it's, you know, sitting on the dark web right now, for all intents and purposes, not really easily found on the internet. And then it happened again today when Spotify said that they were no longer going to carry quote-unquote white power music, or essentially music that glorifies violence against people of color, people who are gay, pretty much people of
people,
certain religions,
people aren't
whether
white,
you're Jew
right.
or Muslim, who aren't white. And so Spotify said, we're not going to carry that anymore. So there is a potential intellectual slippery slope argument you can make and say, look, if these companies can do this, they could do it for any kind of content. And they are. They can. They're private companies. They could, if they don't like, let's say, social justice discussions or racial justice arguments, they could cut those off too.
Or traditional classic NWA West Coast violence
rap
that's about shooting people and you know, violence. I mean, you
right.
can see them making a stand on that.
And that could happen. I feel like, though, that there's an exception for Nazis. You know, there is, it's like, yes, that's true, except Nazis. Like, that's the line.
Yeah.
Like, yes, everything but Nazis, you know,
and that seems to be as much as we chuckle a little bit in that statement. That mm-hmm. seems to be where we're at with free speech. I mean, we're talking about it as it pertains to media,
right.
but or companies that are online. But this is a conversation that's happening all over the country right now. This concept of yes, there is free speech asterisk unless you're a Nazi, and then
right.
you get into this game of. It's really interesting because there, I think that there's merit in the idea of saying that you know, if you're going to incite this kind of rhetoric, this kind of hate speech, it is asterisked out.
Right.
You can't do that. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater.
Exactly.
You can't do this, talk this way about race.
Right. And that's the difference between this kind of speech and every other kind of speech. You know, you could argue that it is okay, or at least allowable, to have hateful speech. Ann Coulter, for example, comes to mind. Somebody who, you know, specifically says awful things about specific groups of people, but stops short of actually inciting violence against them. There is a difference between music that specifically is intended not necessarily for an artistic purpose or for a storytelling purpose, but to actually say, we're going to sing about how great it is to go out and stomp this particular group of people. And there's a difference there. It's exactly what you described as shouting fire in a crowded theater. I mean, yes, free speech, which normally just applies to government putting limits on free speech. Free speech is a value in our country. It is something that's beyond just limits the government can put on it. We value free speech when it comes to private companies as well. But most private companies are now deciding that we are not going to house speech that is an incitement to violence.
And there's a reason for it, because there's a history to it. And the history gets us to places like the Holocaust or right. slavery or even what happened after slavery in the South. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can point to that are disgusting parts of human history where it started with speech like this.
And a lot
and
of times,
I think that's why there's a differentiation when we talk about what's speech and what's hate speech.
A lot of times these arguments come up because it's something new, right? It's a new form of music. It's a new artist. It's a new what have you. This is very, very old. You know, we know how the history plays out here. We know what the next thing is that happens. And up to very recently, pretty much everybody's been on board with not Nazis.
Yeah.
And we're now all of a sudden, because we have to intellectualize and well, actually, and everything, we're now apparently doing that with incitement to violence.
The playing devil's advocate just on the idea of a private company determining what is appropriate for what site. I mean, you see heads of big media companies like Facebook or Twitter come out and condemn neo-Nazis or white supremacy. Yet that's the even with that amazing piece on Vice about that was covering the Charlottesville piece, you hear over and over, we're not just on the internet anymore. We've moved off. We've taken the meme and we've mm-hmm. gone to the streets. Mm-hmm. There has been a utilization of Facebook, Twitter, and other sites like this for these messages, and they haven't done anything about it. I mean, that's one thing to condemn, but it's another in practice
right.
to say, hey, we're not going to have this because they've let it go on. I mean, it's prevailed. It's a prevailing thing on both Facebook and Twitter.
Right, and both those companies have struggled with what is allowable speech. Facebook very famously has taken down posts of women discussing breastfeeding or photos of breastfeeding, for example. And so there's an example of a problematic way in which a private company is limiting a type of speech. And there's usually an uproar about it. And there's usually Facebook coming out and saying they apologize and, you know, fixing that. Twitter has been a haven for a lot of hate speech because they have not developed the kind of tools to crack down on abuse. And I think what we've seen over the last few years is that when you leave speech that is an incitement to violence unchecked, it does make it easier for those folks to assemble and then to get to a point where they are actually able to take their violence offline.
Facebook and not as much Twitter, but I wonder if Facebook, it's fascinating to me because they have put more and more resources into policing their site.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
cutting down on fake news.
Oh my God. Think about even 10 years ago or 5 years ago on Facebook, you know, people wouldn't bother. You try to put something up now that even, you know, is on a line or uses swear words mm-hmm. and you can be monitored. So they have really upped their game and they've put resources into being able to do that. I'm sure they've done the same at Twitter, but really that's at the heart of, I mean, that's probably not what these media companies, these social media companies thought they had to do at the beginning. I'm sure 5 years in, they're like, I guess we should have a budget for monitoring.
Right. I mean, there is an idea that Twitter very famously was sort of like, we are the, I think it was the free speech wing of the left wing or something to that effect. And they held themselves out as being a sort of, you know, the new a town square for a variety of ideas. And it was really easy to say that they were that when it was the Arab Spring, right? And they were sort of leading these grand revolutions, and it was how people were organizing in order to get out from under totalitarian governments. And now those same tools are being used for totalitarianism. And so there's a question many people have said, you know, why doesn't Twitter ban Donald Trump? Because here is somebody who is using this tool to inflame and to incite, maybe not exactly to incite violence, although you could make that argument when it comes to things like the video meme he created of, you know, body slamming CNN.
You could make that argument.
Yeah. I don't think I would go that far personally, but... But there's that question,
again,
it's in that there is an arguable space between is this something that is a reality, or is this a satire, or is this a
There's a lot of people that need to be banned before you get to the president on Twitter.
Right,
and
yeah.
A lot of, yeah.
Yeah. Amazingly, there are worse people on Twitter than the president. Smith. And it's 2017, and I'm making that statement.
Scott Smith, the editorial director at Teamworks Media, is also a new contributor here, or a new media contributor here to The Download. All right, let's take a break, come back, and I want to talk about video. Another fascinating story where it was Mike, right? MIC, laying people off.
Yeah, 25 people.
They want to go towards video. They think video is the future, but the younger generation is like, we don't look at the videos. I mean, once again, a crisis in confidence when it comes to the digital media world that we live in. Scott Smith, my guest, stay with us. Talking media tonight here on The Download. Scott Smith is here, our media new media contributor, also the editorial director at Teamworks Media. He's also going to be part of a panel at the City Bureau's Public Newsroom event. It's about media models for Chicago. It's on Thursday, August 31st from 6 to 8 at Build Coffee, 61st and Blackstone on the south side, citybureau.org for more information. Scott's going to be a panel for that. Let's talk about this Mike. Mike, which is, I guess, a digital newspaper,
digital news brand, very much in the the vein of a Slate, but for younger readers specifically, they very much fly the flag of the millennials.
They laid off 25 people.
Yeah, 25
Why?
People. Well, they say they are it is pivoting to video is the phrase.
Pivoting.
Pivoting generally in the startup world means we had a product and we figured out that this product is not the way we're going to make as much money as we thought. And so we're going to go do a new product and it's going to be this. And so we're pivoting. It's weird to say that you're pivoting to video because video is still a kind of news product, but it's just it's a content type. It's not like you're a newspaper and you're pivoting to, I don't know, billboards or a TV or something like that. Unfortunately, a lot of brands that deal with the news have been doing this. So Mashable was the first big one to have a big mass layoff. MTV followed them, Fox Sports. So there have been a whole bunch that have been doing this kind of pivot to video thing. And the idea is that they will make more money in video because CPMs, the cost for ads, is greater for video and pre-roll or mid-roll.
So essentially, what you're telling me is that the money is in video, meaning there are more money to put an ad on the top of a video is better than a banner ad on the side of it. And that's why you're seeing more and more of these companies move to video. It's not because we necessarily want it. They just realize you can make more money off it.
Publishers are seeing that the ability for them to make money through video ads is greater than typical display, which is kind of the value of those has been killed by more and more publishers making crappy display ads. What usually happens with marketers or publishers is they come on this new content type and they're like, oh, this is great. This is amazing. We can use this to make a lot of money. And then they try to make as much of it as possible and the quality goes down. And that's case for quote unquote content. And it's the case for any kind of ad unit. What's happened with so-called native content is the same thing. People have tried to scale that out and it's by definition impossible to scale out these sort of large ad-driven articles or ad-driven video. And so now they're like, all right, well, we'll just put ads in front of all of our video. Unfortunately, I've worked for a couple different places that deal with video, and it is really hard to scale out video. It's also, you don't just put images on a video and call it a day. You still need writers. You still need editors who can say, that's a good story, that's not a good story. You still need somebody to write a script.
If I'm going to press play on a Stephen Colbert clip, I'm pressing play on a Stephen Colbert clip in the article because I know what I'm going to get. It's Stephen Colbert, and you want to be there because of the talent and the content that's there. You're not just pressing play because you opened the piece. And I think that has to come around in a way that these companies have to recognize that the media that they're producing has to be quality. Therefore, they're going to have to put some money instead of cutting people. They're going to have to put some money into it.
Right. I mean, I think we're all pretty familiar with the idea that on Monday, if you don't have HBO, you can see whatever was on John Oliver's Last Week Tonight that Monday while you're getting back into the office. Unfortunately, if a lot of publishers are just going to be doing that kind of video where they're carrying somebody else's video, there's no kind of value for them as a brand. There's nothing that makes them stick out from anybody else.
Right.
I mean, the only thing that's ever really been of value for publishers has been the data that they have on their consumers, getting their email addresses, getting subscriptions, and maybe being able to host events with them too. Video is not going to save them. It's just going to be another content type, the quality and the value of which is just going to go in the toilet.
Let's pivot and talk about the Chicago Sun-Times yesterday, or I guess it was today, right? I forget when.
I think it was yesterday. Yeah.
The front page of the paper had the huge headline that said fake president, showed Donald Trump, and it was an editorial from the paper about how he kind of bungled what was happening in Charlottesville. Got a lot of attention, much more than you thought it would. Robert Feeder put it out. There were pieces about, is this the new direction under Edwin Eisendrath, the new CEO of the company? They bought it. They, you know, all the things. Is it? I mean, is this what we're going to see? I mean, the idea that this was a much more liberal-leaning company that came in or crew that came in to buy this newspaper, is it going to be this kind of stuff, like playing off the idea of Trump and ratings?
Right. Well, what people have surmised is that because this is a group of unions that have bought the paper, that the paper is going to lean more into the idea of it being a sort of liberal bastion, the way that it's traditionally been. The Tribune has been the sort of rightward counterpart of that. I think that, though, what people are missing is the idea of this newspaper kind of being independent and being locally driven and going more in that direction. You could say that, yes, they're going to be kind of left-leaning, but ultimately what people are looking for out of the Sun-Times is a punchiness. And Eisendrath, I think, has actually used that word, that the paper is punchier, that it's going to be taking stands on things. You know, if you're a reader, particularly if you're a younger reader, younger readers have often, and I say younger, I mean like 25 to 40, have said that they identify with news brands that they, as a reader, they feel like they are saying something about their identity. If they say they're a Sun-Times reader, or if they say they're a Tribune reader, or if they say they're a Mike.com reader.
It's like I listen to a certain type of music.
Right, exactly. Right. So they need for the Sun-Times to essentially feel like that the Sun-Times is speaking for them in a way. And what the Sun-Times has traditionally done with national stories is use its USA Today content and put that on the front page. I think it was a issue a couple weeks ago, and it was the Trump, the line with North Korea about fire and fury was on their front page, and it said USA Today, you know, page 29. And then there was another box, and it said, Glenn Campbell has died, go read the obituary, USA Today page, whatever it was. And so you had the entire Chicago Sun-Times front page promoting content from USA Today, which is a national
and
paper.
And what we're seeing with the new move and the new owners, even quickly, is that they're making, once again, that word pivot, but they're saying that their content's going to lead. They don't necessarily need the USA Today to write about Trump. They can write about Trump.
Right. So they're going to write an editorial, or they're going to have a columnist, and they're going to tie what they're saying into a larger national story and essentially saying, look, we're a paper that understands Chicago, is looking out for the quote-unquote little guy, is looking out for what's happening locally, and we're going to speak for Chicago in that way. And that is what I think appealed to people about that.
But you can understand, the backlash. Just in the idea that, you know, a headline in a newspaper that just got bought by a liberal group says fake president. Mm-hmm. And a picture, I mean, it doesn't get any more, I guess, I don't want to be little d disrespectful than that, right? I mean, the idea that that's where they're going. They're going for this sort of New York Post kind of, we're going to get you. We're going to make everyone go, whoa.
Right.
And is that good? I mean, that's good, I guess.
Well, if you looked at the New York Post front page that same day, it was something, I don't forget what it was, but it was something like, I want to say sympathy for the devils or something. I think that might have been their front page.
Okay.
New York Post, very conservative leaning paper, owned by Rupert Murdoch, right? Like, so here you have the New York Post, the very right wing.
Right.
You have the Chicago Sun-Times, allegedly the very left wing. And
both
essentially
saying the same
both
thing.
Saying the same thing. So I don't know if there's really that argument. I think, again, it's somebody, people want a paper or a publisher who's going to not only tell the truth, but to be able to say, we're not going to do the both sides journalism or the both sides reporting. We're going to be like, this guy is bad, and he is bad. This person in your government is doing a bad thing. And that's what newspapers have always done,
and
whether
they,
it's reporting on corruption or columnists or editorial boards. mean, that's essentially what the Sun-Times did here, and they got rewarded.
We're talking about it, so there you go. Right. The Sun-Times is getting our attention. Scott Smith is our new media contributor here at The Download, also the editorial director at Teamworks Media. He's going to be a panelist at the City Bureau's public newsroom event about media models for Chicago. It's coming up on Thursday, August 31st from 6 to 8 at Build Coffee at 61st and Blackstone on the south side here in Chicago. You can find out the info at citybureau.org. Scott, great to see you. Thanks for coming in, bud.
Absolutely.